This is Barry Tyker of the UW Oral History Project. Today is January 22nd, 1992. I'm in my office in the Red Gym with Hank Brownlee. I interviewed Hank, I believe it was the first week of classes in the fall semester of 91. He was just beginning his job as the first male TA in the Women's Studies Department. This is a follow-up interview. His semester has been completed, and we're going to talk a little bit about how that semester went. Generally speaking, Hank, how do you think your classes, the classes you TA'd, went this past semester?
On the whole, I think they went pretty well. It's difficult to give one overall evaluation of what happened with 55 different students. It went a lot better for some than for others. But I was pretty happy by the end of the semester, yeah.
When you started, you mentioned in your first interview that you thought you had identified three groupings of students in your class: those who thought your presence was a great idea, those who were unsure, and those who were opposed to your role as a TA. Did this turn out to be the case, and how did this evolve throughout the course of the semester?
Mm-hmm. Well, that three-part division was something I came up with conjecturally before the semester started, and just was something I used to raise a topic and talk to the students about ways they might possibly react. And I really had no indication ahead of time how many of them would react any of those ways. As it turned out, I think most of them thought it really wasn't a big deal. Stop for a second. Yeah. There really wasn't any major conflict or tension around the issue in my class. There were a few students who I think probably felt it wasn't really that good an idea, but it, like I said, didn't become a major issue. The closest there was to any difficulty were two students who were both good friends with each other, who I noticed partway through the semester were really quite unengaged with the class. And this, I think, had to do with a number of factors: the style of the lecture, the level of the material that we were using. They were both older than most of the students and clearly had thought about these issues quite a bit more. And I think we're a little disappointed with what seemed to them a very soft and gradualist approach that we were taking, that other students weren't being pushed as hard as they might like to see, to question their own assumptions and this sort of thing. And in different ways, I had discussions about their own response to the class with each of these students. One wrote in one of her initial reaction papers that she did have some questions about a male TA, and I responded as best I could to her questions and explained how I saw the issues, and thanked her for sharing her views. And one of her concerns, as I mentioned, was that other students were not being pushed as hard as they might in discussion. And I pointed out that it was not at all inappropriate for anyone else in the class, including her, to speak up if they thought someone was saying something that needed to be challenged. And on a couple occasions she did, which worked out really quite well. The other student friend of hers was someone who was having some kind of personal crisis at the same time, having difficulty in all of her classes, and it's hard to disentangle how much of her lack of engagement in the class had to do with what we were doing and what else was happening in her life. She was someone who had not done any of the early reaction papers that I'd asked for to be self-scheduled. They had a choice of when to do them and free choice of topic. But halfway through the semester, I didn't have any from her. And she said she didn't really know what to write about. She just felt kind of angry and frustrated about a lot of things, including how the class was going. I told her that it would be fine to write about what was making her angry and frustrated in the class. She said she'd been keeping a journal, and I said, well, some other students have been just handing in parts of their journals. That would be fine if you wanted to. She thought that would be all right, except that she felt the things that she was writing were things that she just didn't feel comfortable having a man read. So what we worked out was that she would drop off copies of what she'd been writing for one of the other TAs, one of the women who was a TA, to look at and write comments on and return in a sealed envelope. through me back to her. And that's what we did, and it worked out fine. And in the end, her work was really quite good.
You mentioned in the last interview that I believe it was at the end of your first week of classes that students had the opportunity to switch into another discussion section if they wanted, but you welcome mm-hmm. people to stay there and give their opposing viewpoints and sort of see how that shook out.
Yeah.
Did any students take you up on that option? And secondly, do you think these students might have been better off had they switched out initially?
Mm-hmm. Well, there wasn't a lot of switching across sections. Out of my initial set of students, a small number dropped. Of the ones that ended up in different sections, I think they were ones who never even came to my class the first time, so they didn't even know they would have been assigned the male TA. Of those who did switch, no one told us why they were switching. As far as I know, there was no one who did switch for that reason. Most people just stayed put where they were. And there wasn't a lot of explicit commentary about objecting to a male TA. But then I wouldn't expect there to be, because I was the TA, there was a power relation, I was going to give them a grade. And if I didn't like it, the last thing I would really expect, even though I would have welcomed it, would have been for them to tell me they didn't like it, and why not? So all I can go on are indirect indications, the fact that they did stay. The sections ended up all being about the same size. I think mine, in fact, were slightly larger than the other TA sections, probably just because of time of day and convenience for the students. And then the feedback that I did get from those who chose to tell me things. About 4 weeks into the semester, I asked them all to write anonymous comments on how they felt things were going, what they liked, what they didn't like, what was working, what wasn't working. And those were really quite encouraging. They were primarily quite positive. Most people were very happy with how discussion was happening, felt that they had ample opportunity to express themselves, really appreciated hearing from the other students, felt that the topics we were discussing were really opening their eyes to things happening around them. What criticisms there were, and there were really very few, the few that there were mainly things like feeling that I didn't respond enthusiastically enough to comments that were made in class, that I wasn't guiding the discussions forcefully enough, that sort of thing. And these were all anonymous. Mm-hmm. So I would hope they would be somewhat honest. On the other hand, they were handwritten by people whose work I was also seeing, so they knew if I really wanted to, I could probably match up the handwriting and figure out who had said what. So it wasn't completely safe and anonymous. The other feedback that I got was largely through these reaction papers as they continued through the semester. As I mentioned, they had free choice to write whatever they wanted, and a number of people frequently chose to write comments about the class or how it was going. A couple of students told either me or the professor in charge of the class in discussions with her that I was the best TA they'd had at the university, which felt nice. But if 2 out of 55 tell me that, that doesn't really tell us a whole lot about the other 53. So, you know, it's mainly scattered. At the end of the semester, there were the official evaluations that the Women's Studies program runs. And those, again, are anonymous, and they all knew that I wouldn't see those until after the grades had been submitted, so I think they can be taken pretty seriously. And again, they were primarily quite positive. It was really encouraging for the most part. Students felt that they got a lot out of discussion, felt that it was visible that I was working hard, and they appreciated that, got a lot of feedback on their work. And a number of them felt that the class had made a major difference in how they viewed themselves and the world around them, and in some way changed their lives, which was great. And of course, there were some negative comments. I think well within the parameters of what you'd usually expect from any evaluation. Students differ in what they're looking out of a class and looking for in a class, and whatever you do is going to satisfy some and not others. So most of the negative comments were sort of balanced by positive comments that said exactly the same thing. People felt that things weren't structured enough. Others felt that it was great that I gave the students a lot of responsibility to run things and that they learned a lot from doing that. So that's the kind of thing that's inevitable. One student in the evaluation at the end did write that she felt that it probably wasn't that good an idea in retrospect to have male TAs in these classes. Said that it was, you know, nothing against me. She thought I was great, but that any man would have the effect of making some students less comfortable speaking out, and that she felt that it happened with herself. Another went out of her way to say she thought that it was wonderful and that she thought it would be important to get more men involved in teaching in women's studies. So clearly it works for some students and not for others.
You said that some women commented on how it had changed their perception of them, how they viewed themselves. How did it change it? How had they viewed themselves before, and what happened throughout the course of the class that shifted that point of view?
Well, those were really the factors that I found most gratifying in teaching the class. And again, it's hard to know exactly what factors were involved in bringing these changes about, whether it was things they found in the readings, the lectures that they listened to twice a week, more often than they saw me, whether it was the discussions that we had, the things they wrote for me, my comments on them, who knows how it all added up. But there were a number of students who did say things like, I never really paid much attention to this particular way that I was treated or women around me were treated. I just never noticed it, or noticed it but thought nothing of it, or noticed it but thought it was just natural and there's nothing to do about it. And now I find that I'm just less willing to accept that. And it really bothers me when I see that happening, and I speak up about it now, and I just don't take that shit anymore. And nothing could make me happier than to hear this from the students.
You said that I believe these evaluations were also numerically rated. How did that work out? What did you end up with on that?
Yeah, there's also the standard set of numerical rankings, and they ask all kinds of questions about different aspects of the class. And then at the end, there's one question for an overall rating. How highly would you recommend this TA to other students who are considering studying with him or her? And it's on a 5-point scale. Mine averaged out to 4.08 out of 5, which I understand for the university as a whole is quite high, although for women's studies TAs, it's quite typical that most of them end up getting very high rankings.
You mentioned something earlier about that that you took a gradualist approach in your TA. Could you explain what you mean by that, and what would be as opposed to to what?
Well, this was both me and the lecturer,
and
Sapira, and how she chose the readings and what kind of language she used in presenting stuff. One way would be to really try to shock students at the beginning and persuade them that there's a lot of really awful stuff going on in the world and they should be very upset about it, and to use the kind of language that the people who do see the world from a clearly feminist viewpoint use all the time. And that has its advantages, and in retrospect it might have been good to do a little bit more of that. On the other hand, that can also set up a lot of alienation among students who are less prepared to accept this stuff. And in the long run, it may be better, and this was the approach that we were thinking about at the beginning, to start with claims that didn't sound quite so outrageous, to point out things that were readily visible around them, and gradually build up a framework of analysis that says, it's not just that there are some isolated bad things going on, but there are actually structural reasons for this. There is widespread, systematic maltreatment of women. The word oppression is not inappropriate. There is something called patriarchy, and there are some people, namely men, who systematically benefit from this, regardless of their own personal perspectives, their own personal viewpoint, and other people who systematically, namely women, systematically are disadvantaged because of this. And that kind of language was stuff that we didn't use right at the beginning of the semester. And if someone in my discussion class would say something like, all these women who end up not studying as much math and science in schools, it's their choice. I mean, I know in my school anyone could sign up for whatever they wanted to, and if they chose not to, well, that's okay. They just wanted to do something else instead. And we shouldn't look down on them for deciding that they'd rather do something that's more conventionally considered a feminine field. And if someone said that, then I would ask some gentle questions about, Why do you think that? And is it true that the choice they're making is being made in a context where the rewards and incentives and punishments are really the same for women as they are for men? Are there different kinds of expectations that might have an effect on people? But to do it in a real gentle sort of way. Mm-hmm. And that specifically was something that this student I mentioned earlier was impatient with. One of the things I mentioned to her in my response was that in my written responses to students who made these kinds of comments in their reaction papers, I was actually quite a bit more challenging of their assumptions mm-hmm. and asked much more pointed questions, but felt that certainly at the beginning of the semester when we were trying to establish a safe space where people would all feel that whatever it was they thought was something they could say without being jumped on, that it was better to try to bring them along slowly and gradually and emphasize that it was okay that they thought that, even though I disagreed with it, that it didn't make them a bad person. That, you know, especially with all the junk you hear about political correctness on mm-hmm. campus now and these really rabid attacks on anyone who does take a strong anti-sexist or anti-racist line, that they're somehow indoctrinating their students and quashing free discussion, that you can't say anything without being labeled politically incorrect, that it was important to try to establish a space where people did feel free to acknowledge what was on their minds, that in the long run it would be a much more effective way of getting them to change their minds if they were at least able to participate, say what was on their minds, and then we could discuss that and look at the assumptions and look at the implications, rather than having them feel that there were certain kinds of thoughts that simply couldn't be expressed in class.
Now, you mentioned in your first interview, and correct me if I have this wrong, that women developing a feminist identity often, quote, go through stages of consciousness raising that often yield angry reactions to men in general. Since you had this gradualist approach, was there a point that you could sense in the development of your class over the semester where this kind of thought emerged? And if so, how did you, as a male and as a TA, handle that development?
Well, again, I have to keep repeating this, that things were so different and variable for different students. Mm-hmm. And even the feel of my three different sections became very different over the course of the semester. In a lot of ways, the experiences across the entire class really did not coalesce into any easily labeled overall experience. On the whole, there wasn't a great deal of really strong emotion expressed in the classroom while we were there. Things occasionally got passionate, probably more so than they would in, you know, a history or an English class. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily as much as I thought they might, knowing what kinds of topics we were dealing with. People certainly told a great many personal stories that were difficult to express, but it was done with a quiet passion. It was mm-hmm. It was calm. Where there was anger expressed, I know there were certainly some writings that were very angry. And partway through the semester, we established the habit of having some of these writings shared, read to the rest of the class, where they would be of interest. And one of them that was shared was one that was particularly quite angry. It was in response to the Thomas Hill hearings. Mm-hmm. And this woman was just infuriated that this bunch of old white senators, male white senators, who many of whom probably had the habit of doing much the same stuff that Clarence Thomas was accused of, were in a position of judging and were clearly not taking the issue seriously on its own merits, but were basically trying to cover themselves politically and asking questions and looking at issues that were going to not upset the White House or that would not upset the voters, but weren't really trying to establish the facts of the matter. and didn't really seem to care that much about what Anita Hill went through. And, you know, who were they to do this? Why did they get in a position to do that? What right did they have? It just wasn't right. And she was rightfully so very angry, wrote about that and read it in class. And, you know, people are very quiet. And yeah, that's right. We feel that way too. So anger was expressed in that way, but not in a way that amounted to, you know, a lot of raised voices or very, I don't know, disputative, strong disagreements between people within this section very much.
Now, before we go, I want to talk a little bit about the Hill, Anita Hill, Clarence Thomas hearings in a bit, but you said you had 10%, about approximately 10% of the discussion sections were male.
Mm-hmm.
How did they handle these types of instances where there was rage, you know, or anger expressed against male? And what perspectives did they bring that you felt were of importance to the development of the class?
Again, this is something that I thought might have occupied a lot of my attention, trying to manage the class,
mm-hmm.
to deal with the men who were there and their responses to the subject matter, their responses to the women students, their responses to me as a male instructor. And it's something that did not end up being as central and just time and energy consuming as I thought it might be. There were 5 men distributed among the sections, so each section had at least one. And again, there was quite a bit of variety in their responses. There were one or two who seemed to feel that they needed to do a lot of talking, perhaps because there weren't many other men around, so they needed to represent the male point of view. And if we're going to have a discussion that's about women and men, then maybe about half the talking should be by men. If there's only one of them, then it turns into a dialogue between him and everyone else. So there were one or two who had that kind of inclination. By the end of the semester, that mostly calmed down. There were others who seemed to feel that they were sort of guests mm-hmm. in this context and spoke up only very rarely when they felt they had something that was important, and mostly wanted to be there for lending quiet support and hearing what the women had to say. On the average, I think they probably spoke more than the women did, partly because of this dynamic of feeling that they were representing a bunch of other people, and partly because of who ends up in these classes. Among the women, it's a fairly broad cross-section of the women on campus, certainly those who have at least some interest in the class and in the topics, more so than the population at large. But it's a pretty broad selection. Among the men, it's not a random selection of the men on campus. It's mainly men who already have quite a bit of commitment to the issues that they wouldn't think of taking a women's studies class, and often have done more reading and thinking about it than the average woman in the class. So sometimes they have a lot to say simply because they've already done more thinking about these issues and done more reading about them. And then occasionally the women in class, and this is something I've heard from other instructors, happens very often in these classes, the women themselves will play a role in causing the men to speak more because they will occasionally look to the men specifically and ask them, well, you know, how does this sound to a man? And it's a frequent challenge of women's studies instructors, from what I hear, to try to prevent that from happening too much, to make sure the focus of the class, since it is a women's studies class, remains on women and their experiences and not on men and their reactions to women and their experiences. And on one or two occasions, it tended to drift off in that direction, but no more so from what I hear than would be the case in any other women's studies class.
I realize, again, we're talking about a very small sample, but did you see, just as you are a male, or were a male TA, it's sort of a women's world up to that point, do you feel that the female students in the class accepted these males as peers, or do you think they felt a little bit of resentment that their territory was being invaded?
All right, that they had no business here, and
yeah,
what were
right.
they doing, taking
so,
over?
Yeah,
this is our class for us.
Right.
I didn't see a lot of that sentiment expressed. You know, again, it may have been felt and just not expressed, and there would be good reasons why they wouldn't have expressed it to me, being a male TA. But no, I mean, in one class, when I got back those anonymous written comments early in the semester that I mentioned, there were a number of students who said they felt that a small number of people were dominating the discussion, talked a lot more than other folks. But I think they were speaking of women students as much as the one man who was in that class. And in fact, one of the women identified herself as someone who she thought was talking too much and wanted to think about how to manage classroom time so that didn't happen. I mean, she was very enthusiastic and had a lot to say, and said what she did out of an impulse to want to share that with other people, not because she wanted to control things, but realized that that meant she was taking up more than her share and wanted to think together with the rest of us about how to handle that. So it wasn't something that was strongly gender-marked in who was talking and who wasn't. Though there was one very interesting interaction in one of the other sections. The week of Thanksgiving, we had optional class meetings because most people were out of town by Wednesday of that week anyway. And I told people if they wanted to come, I'd be there and we could talk about anything if they were going to be out of town or didn't want to be there, not to worry about it. So we had very small meetings, three people in one class and two in the other. In the class that had three, actually one of them came late. The first two who were there were both women, and one was someone who was very thoughtful in writing excellent stuff in class but hadn't spoken up very much in class, was kind of shy about that. And the other was one who spoke a fair bit. And in trying to have a real informal conversation with them about how class was going and what things they liked and didn't like and how we might change some things and trying to get a sense from them about why they were or weren't participating to the extent they were. They mentioned that they felt that the two men in the class were talking more than their share, really. And I asked about whether they had considered saying that in class or approaching these men. And one of them said, well, you know, I thought about doing it and actually had decided that I would, but the context just didn't quite feel right. We always got onto something else, and it was hard to just break into the middle of some subject-oriented discussion to mention this, but I really would like to, and I think, in fact, that I will. And I said, you know, as a TA, it's part of my job to raise that sort of thing. If you like, I can bring it up myself or repeat to the men in class the kinds of things that you've been saying now. You know, that they really did appreciate your presence and a lot of good things to say, but it did seem like they were talking you know, more than they really needed to. And as we were having this discussion, a third person came in who was one of the two men in the class.
Oh.
So there were giggles and smiles all around, and he looked a little bit perplexed. So I explained to him what we had been talking about, and then that discussion between the two women students and him happened in front of us, which worked out really well.
Did diffuse or resolve the issue in at least
Yeah.
your mind?
It wasn't something there was a lot of tension about.
Right.
I mean, once they raised it, he said, you know, I was kind of noticing that myself. And he said that one reason he thought this happened, and the women there agreed, is that often I might ask a question or something would come up, and I would wait for someone to respond to it, and a lot of the women would be slow to respond, whether because of you know, socialization about not jumping on to take the floor, about shyness speaking in front of groups, about being very thoughtful and wanting to turn the issue over in their head for a while before speaking up. And often he felt he was speaking simply because no one else was. And perhaps if he just waited a while longer and put up with the silence, which might be uncomfortable, some of the women would fill up that space. And he was more conscious about it, and I think things were more balanced the rest of the semester.
I'm going to kind of get off the topic a little bit here. Basically, this interview is set up, of course, to find out how things went for you personally. But a couple of things happened during the course of the last semester, historical events that I just can't, as a historian, pass up. One, of course,
right.
is you've already hinted on, is the Anita Hill Clarence Thomas hearings, which came as a result of Clarence Thomas's nomination to the Supreme Court. The other is the William Kennedy Smith rape situation down in Florida. They both happened throughout the course of the semester. Of course, I'm sure you must have had to, you must have dealt with each of those. You mentioned the Hill thing already. Did that letter response that that woman wrote about Anita Hill, did that pretty much characterize the feelings of the class? How did the direction of the discussion go? And how passionate characterized the intensity of it?
Well, it was pretty clear that there was a lot more support for Anita Hill than Clarence Thomas, mm-hmm. which shouldn't come as much of a surprise. Mm-hmm. That one particular paper I mentioned was more strongly worded and clearer in its passion than most students' responses were. This again came from one of the students who had evidently done a lot more thinking and been more involved in women's issues than most students. So on the whole, they were quite offended by the proceedings, a little bit perplexed as to why Anita Hill's so patently credible and well-supported testimony had so little impact on the senators, on the national press, on people in the country as a whole. And it was something we talked about some. It didn't become as central a focus as one might have guessed. I imagine, just like in every class, instructors feel so pressed to squeeze in everything that they had planned that often opportunities like this aren't seized as well as they might be. It did turn out, due to the timing, that the Hill-Thomas business was in the press when we got to the sexual harassment portion of the syllabus. So in lecture, it was alluded to and used as an example of many of the dynamics that we were talking about, reasons why women might be reluctant to report harassment, reasons why they're often not believed, reasons why many people, both men and women, but primarily men, fail to take these accusations seriously and dismiss them, either as not really happening, or if they did happen, as not particularly important. Reasons why men and women so often respond to these incidents so differently. Why they should be something that strike women as extremely important and serious and simply representative of a much broader array of oppressive actions, and why they should often strike men as an aberration or an isolated incident or just not that big a deal. So it was used as an example in lecture. We didn't really focus a great deal of discussion time on it, other than that, you know, it came up in the course of discussing various topics, examples of it. It was alluded to in a number of the freeform reaction papers that my students wrote. One real clear example, again, that I was quite happy to see. Again, just before Thanksgiving, one of the students wrote that during her driving instruction some 4 or 5 years ago, when she was learning to drive a car, her driving instructor had sexually harassed her. And it was something that she never told anyone about, primarily because she felt she would not be believed. And specifically because of watching Anita Hill testify and seeing her courage, and seeing how she was able to retain her dignity despite hostile questioning, being able to see that it was possible to report this. She felt that she was prepared to tell people about it and planned to, while she was home over Thanksgiving, tell her parents about what happened. And that was really pleasing to see. For one thing, apart just from watching one of my students grow stronger and more sure of herself and prepared to speak up about stuff, it kind of flew in the face of what a lot of people were predicting the impact of the Hill-Thomas hearings would be. A lot of folks expected that having her go through the terrible trauma of that testimony and public scrutiny, and then have Thomas essentially cleared, mm-hmm. I mean, not in any formal way cleared of charges, but have it not prevent him from being confirmed, and basically be believed by more people than believed her. A lot of folks felt that would discourage women from reporting. They would think, well, why bother? This is what the result is going to be. And it was good to see that, at least on this one student, the main lesson was not that don't bother because it won't stop him anyway, but that yes, bother because it's something that you can do and you can draw courage. And that just for the sake of speaking up and setting the example and feeling that you yourself did something about it, that you weren't a passive victim, that you acted on it, regardless of how other people responded to your act, that's something you don't have control over. Seeing that was a possibility was an inspiration to at least some women.
One of the things that's facts that surprised me in the Thomas Hill hearings is when the percentages of who believed whom came out. I believe it was 60% of the women in America believed Clarence Thomas over Anita Hill.
Yeah, I don't remember the numbers, but it was clear that there was not.
It was a majority.
And then there wasn't a big difference between how the women broke down and how the men broke down. That it was fairly similar.
Did you discuss that?
We did talk about that a little bit. One of the main themes in the course was how our thinking was formed by our social structure, by how things are run, by what kinds of assumptions are made, and what we come to take for granted. Mm-hmm. And women and men growing up in the same society are subject to much the same sort of training in how to view the world. So it's not that surprising that a lot of women would have saw things the same way that men did. And some other dynamics that might encourage some women to go along with that majority perspective would be that for women who were aware that this kind of treatment went on, and wanted to feel that it couldn't happen to them, there's a lot of reason to think of it as something that someone must have drawn on themselves, that she must have caused it somehow. It was her fault. And that way you can feel safe from it if you're, you know, a good person, a nice woman, who doesn't talk about nasty stuff, who is careful about who she hangs out with and doesn't go places where she shouldn't be, then if you feel it can't happen to you, then you're safe from it. It only happens to women who break the rules, essentially. And the same kind of dynamic happens around sexual assault. So there's some reason that women might want to blame women who are victims of this kind of behavior for it. And say that, well, you know, clearly he could not have simply singled out someone who had not done anything to ask for it. And then there were those who wanted to deny that it happens at all. Again, partly to believe that it couldn't happen to them. So that's one of the dynamics that seems to contribute to that.
Did the students pretty much watch the hearings? Did you get the feeling that there was a pretty high percentage here, actually?
A fair bit, yeah. I mean, I had the impression most everybody was glued to the TV for at least part of that.
Anybody come out in defense of Clarence Thomas in the class?
I don't remember anyone doing that, yeah.
Now, the other historical event that happened, or that will probably be a historical event, is the William Kennedy Smith, what you call it, rape accusations, I guess, down in Florida. Another clear example, there's a lot of parallels to the Anita Hill thing, where somebody's speaking up and then gets taken to task for speaking up. Was this talked about by your lecturer? Did you discuss this in your class, and how did that go?
Much less so. That really came to prominence much later in the semester. Mm-hmm. And the trial itself was going on in December. Mm-hmm. We were already in, wrapping up the course and breaking for study period and preparing for finals and whatnot. And it was well past the time in the course where we were covering the topics most directly related to that, issues around sexual assault. and issues about women in the legal system, which we also discussed separately. So it wasn't really as prominent a part of our discussions.
Getting back to you now and to the direct line of questioning, going to the Supreme Court here. Your classes have generated a certain amount of publicity. We talked about some of those before in the first interview, both on and off campus. Discuss what happened in terms of publicity and how that affected you and your class, if at all.
Well, it was distinctly unpleasant, but beyond that, I'm not sure it really had a great deal of impact on any of what happened in class.
Now, what was unpleasant? Just the general nature of publicity or specific pieces in particular? Or
yeah, well, just being
the spotlight.
Being a notorious character on campus was unpleasant. So just having that spotlight was a little weird. Having people meet me and say, oh, yeah, you're the one I read about. in some ways, it's a little bit thrilling to be the center of attention. Everyone likes to have attention. And to the extent that the attention was positive, it was kind of nice. But all in all, I really could have done without it. And some of the attention was quite negative. A lot of that just out of pure incompetence on the part of the press. We were talking earlier before we started recording about the articles that appeared in the campus papers. There was one that had appeared before our first interview, which was bothersome that the issue had become such a focus of attention, but the article itself didn't have much in it that I found objectionable. There was a follow-up article a few weeks later that was very upsetting. The person who wrote it and I spoke for quite a while on the phone beforehand. I had the impression that we had talked about it enough that he had a pretty clear understanding of where I was coming from, my areas where I had doubt, areas where I thought this was worth trying, what kinds of approaches I was going to use in the classroom. And it seemed that he understood all that, and perhaps he did, perhaps he didn't, but a lot of it didn't appear in the article that he wrote. The selective aspects of what I told him that ended up in the article that weren't balanced by other things really portrayed all in all what I thought was a very inaccurate overall view of where I was coming from, and it was topped off by a headline that I imagine he didn't write. Typically, the reporters don't write their headlines. The headline just said something that was really quite opposed to how I viewed things. Basically, he had begun the interview by asking if I had encountered any particular problems in my classes the first couple of weeks of the semester. And my answer was, well, nothing in particular has happened that was really that problematic, no. And then went on to talk about, areas that I thought might be difficult or areas that I thought might go well. And he began his article with a paragraph that was more or less a summary of my response to his first question that was a little bit incomplete, but not completely outrageous. He said that I had said that I had not encountered any problems since classes started last week. Now, saying I had encountered no problems was a little bit stronger than how I put it, but it's understandable how he would get that out of our interview. But then the headline writer just read his first paragraph, probably didn't read the rest of the article, and came up with this headline, which was, "First Male TA in Women's Studies Sees No Problems." And this was on the front page of the paper. And I was really upset. I had gone to some trouble to explain to him that I saw all kinds of problems, that there was no way to be certain this was going to work well, and there were lots of good reasons to think that that problems could and probably would arise. Just that all in all, there was enough reason to think that it was worth trying to see what would happen, and that we had some belief that it would overall be a positive experience, both for me and the students. So that article was really very upsetting. I, in fact, drafted a column that I was planning to ask the paper to run, trying to clarify my own thinking on these and what the program itself was doing. which I passed around to a few people for comments, including the chair of the program, who said that she thought it was a very well-written column, but that her advice, which I was free to choose or not choose to follow, her advice was very strongly that it would be best not to submit it, simply because at this point, fighting with the press was not likely to end up with the result that I was hoping for. It would just antagonize them, telling them that they got it wrong, even if I did it diplomatically and did not attribute any malicious intent to them, would antagonize them. And that keeping the issue alive by writing about it more was probably not the best move. And that difficult as it might be to do, my best move would be to simply say nothing and hope that whatever attention was generated by this article would die down and it would go away. And I reluctantly agreed that that was probably the best route. I was really boiling and just had a hard time not doing anything about it, but I did nothing about it, and I pretty regularly for the next few weeks picked up the paper to see if there were any outraged members of the community writing into the Cardinal, and as far as I know, there weren't any letters written in about this at all, and it went away. I mean, the bizarre thing about it was that the content of the article was largely that there was no news. You know, he asked me, well, was anything going on, and I said, well, nothing really. I mean, you know, a lot of beginning of semester stuff and this and that. And it's an interesting situation, and I suppose there'll be some difficulties, but there isn't really anything particular to report. So it's odd they wrote about it at all, but then to put that on the front page as big news, first MLTA says, there's nothing going on. So I guess after a while they also decided that, in fact, there wasn't any news here, there was nothing going on, and it went away.
Now, there will, for the record, I have a copy of that article. There's also another article from the Cap Times, I believe, and both of those articles will be on file in Hank's folder here in the Oral History Project.
Let me add one more thing about that article, since it's going to be on file.
We're on side two of the Hank Bromley interview. Do you want to continue with
that? Yeah, so I had told the reporter much the same that I had in the previous interview about explaining to the students that I could imagine all different kinds of responses to having a MLTA, including some thinking it was a really bad idea. And he asked me whether I had gotten any feedback of that sort, if any students had told me that they were really quite offended by it. And I told him that, well, no one had approached me and told me that, but then I really wouldn't expect anyone to, even if they did feel that way, because, you know, I'm their TA, there's a power relationship. And that really, if people were unhappy, the only thing I would expect for us to see would be very indirect evidence. For instance, people perhaps switching to other sections. Mm-hmm. And in fact, there hadn't been a mass exodus out of my class. So the way this discussion ended up in the article was to quote me as saying, if they do have a problem with me, I would expect them to drop the course. suggesting that I had told them, well, you know, take it or leave it. This is what you're stuck with, and if you don't like it, you might as well get out. Which was, I had said nothing of the sort.
Yeah, I've been down that road myself sometimes. It's not very much fun. Okay, we've been talking specifically about your classes now and your relationships with your students and how that went. In the first interview, we framed this in the context of the Women's Studies Department in its entirety. And you said, you documented very clearly, I think, in that first interview, the controversy that was essentially created by your appointment as a TA. Once that first week got rolling along and the semester got rolling along, did that controversy continue? And I'm talking about with other TAs, with graduate students, with your professor, I'm sorry, Virginia
Sapiro,
and other members of the Women's Studies Department. Did that controversy mm-hmm. continue throughout the semester? And if so, and what form did it take?
Yeah. No, there really wasn't a lot of that. There really had at no point been controversy in any official sense in the program. because it wasn't a topic of official discussion at a meeting. And what controversy there was people speaking on their own in informal contexts. And I heard diminished rumblings of that sort over the course of the semester. I mean, people accepted that it was happening, and they didn't like it anymore, I imagine, but there wasn't much point in continuing to talk about it. And I didn't sense any hostility from faculty in the program or other TAs. Mm-hmm. No one made me feel unwelcome. No one came up to me and told me they thought that I shouldn't be doing this. But it's also the case that even before the semester started, no one had done that either. Whatever opposition I had known about that was expressed to me directly was only in response to my searching it out and trying to hear from people who felt that way. And once the semester started, I stopped walking around looking for people who felt that way, because I had decided that I would, in fact, go ahead and take the job. So that really is an indication one way or the other, whether feelings continued to be at the same level or not, since no one was approaching me beforehand either. And once I stopped looking for it, I just didn't hear that much about it.
You were the first TA and the only TA last semester. Have you heard any talk in the department about the department hiring other TA? You're not in the Women's Studies department.
Well, there are no graduate students actually in the program. All of the TAs are hired from other departments.
But you're not, TA not working in Women's Studies this semester. You're in at policies. We'll get to that in a second.
Right.
Based on what you've heard and seen, do you think there will be more male TAs besides yourself in the Women's Studies department?
Well, the policy remains as it was, that lecturers have the prerogative of hiring whoever they want as their TAs. So I imagine it will continue to be up to the individual lecturers. If they think it's a good idea, they can do it, and if they don't think it's a good idea, they won't do it. The fact that it's happened and student feedback was primarily positive, I suppose could be an encouraging factor in the future. But the number of men on campus who are likely to apply and who are qualified enough to actually have a chance of being hired over the other applicants is small enough that I don't think it's something that's going to come up real often anyway. Mm-hmm. When it does, I imagine it will continue to be the individual judgment of the lecturer who happens to be in charge that semester. And perhaps they'll look at this as a demonstration that it's possible and plausible. I'm not sure that it opens the floodgates in any sense.
Moving from Women's Studies to you, we started out with the students that we went to Women's Studies, and now we're going to go to you personally. You mentioned earlier in this discussion that specifically several women you felt had made changes about their own perception of themselves and the directions of their lives and their relationships with other women and with people in general. What about you as a result of this past semester? Has this had any fundamental or profound change on you as a person?
If it has, I'm still too close to it to see it. This is another case of where all of the various specific experiences are not coalescing for me into any single picture of what it was about. There are a lot of specific episodes that were extremely gratifying when I saw students making big changes. Other instances that felt kind of awkward that I would have done differently had I a chance to do it over again. But it's really just a mosaic of lots of things that happened, and no overall lesson that I've been able to draw from it.
Has this affected your scholarship in any way, or the direction of your scholarship, or anything like that?
Well, it's meant that I've been far too busy teaching to do any of my own scholarship. I knew early in the semester that I just was not going to touch my dissertation because of this and several other commitments that I had at the same time. And I've been hoping that this semester I'll actually get back to do it, so it remains to be seen how it might in fact have that impact. If it does, I think it'll be through effects that I'm not entirely conscious of. And I would guess that it's sure to have some impact on me just because it was an experience that I was very wrapped up in. It was really the main focus of my life for the last semester. And it's what I spent a great deal of time on and was just thinking about pretty much all the time that I wasn't doing it. And reacting very strongly emotionally to what my classes seemed to go well and less well. So any experience that was that intensive, I'm sure, is bound to have some impact, but I really couldn't predict what it is and what it's going to be.
Kind of a corny question, but uh-huh. Let me ask it anyway. Knowing what you know now, would you do it over again?
Yeah, I think I would, but I would have done it a different semester. Knowing the things that we spoke about last time, about the internal politics of the program, the restructuring that had just happened, that no doubt there would have been some controversy whenever it was done, but I think it was really intensified and multiplied by the fact that people were feeling so raw and burnt by the process that had just gone on, that with another 6 months or so for that to have receded, I don't think we would have had the synergistic effect of the two interacting the way they did. And I would have found out more about the hiring process before I applied. But yeah, I think on the whole, I would have done it and may in fact do it again. I chose not to reapply for this current semester, partly because the teaching had taken so much of my time. I wanted something that would involve working with fewer students. Mm-hmm. And the job that I'm doing now was one that I was really quite anxious to do and had been anxious to do before I was hired in Women's Studies and passed that semester so I could do the Women's Studies TA, but still found very attractive and wanted to do. So that's what I'm doing now.
Why don't you and just briefly talk about what
sure. you're doing? A lecturer in Ed Policy Studies for a class called School and Society, which means that it's my class. Mm-hmm. You know, I wrote the syllabus and chose the readings and meet with my students for 3 hours a week rather than 1 hour a week. And that's quite an exciting thing to do.
Are you going to bring in any aspects of what you've been teaching this past semester into your School and Society course?
Well, I had always planned for there to be a good deal of attention to gender issues in this class, even before I did the Women's Studies TA. It's possible that presence is a little stronger than it would have been otherwise, I don't know. I don't think I brought over any specific readings that I became exposed to because of the Women's Studies class. I mean, the gender literature in education was something that I had my familiarity with before I did the Women's Studies class. It wasn't something we focused on there, so it wasn't as though I was exposed to a lot of new literature in that area mm-hmm. because of it. So that is remaining a presence, but mainly through literature that I picked up outside of that experience.
Are there any people in the Women's Studies Department you would think I might want to interview about what's going on in the department now? And, not directly in relationship to your experience, but in the development of the department, mm-hmm. department as past, present, and future. You said it's sort of in a state of decision-making right now about the direction it's going to be taken, restructuring.
Well, that's pretty well settled.
Oh,
I mean, that was decided just before I was offered the position.
Okay.
And all the raw feelings around that were from having just gone through that process. But formally, that decision was made last spring, and it's an accomplished fact at this point, and is not something that I hear much discussion about.
Okay.
You know, there are certainly people who think it was the wrong decision.
but who could I go to get a good pro and con of that debate?
Since I wasn't really in the program during that debate, but joined as it was settled just after the decision was made, I really am not in the best position to indicate. But I can give you at least some leads of who to talk to who might be able to.
Is there anything else you'd like to, any other topics, issues, et cetera, that we haven't talked about that you'd like to?
No, I don't think there's anything else that I would specifically want to add to what we've done on this.
Okay, this is Barry Tiger, concluding the follow-up interview with Hank Brownlee. Thanks, Hank.